Okay, let's unpack this. Imagine a single document, right, born from the devastation of World War II, that boldly declared a, quote, common standard of achievement for all humanity. It's the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the UDHR. And today we're diving into how this, well, frankly, radical vision is still fighting to become a global reality.
It really is, proclaimed in Paris, 1948. And it was deliberately drafted by representatives from, incredibly diverse cultures.
Yeah, I saw that. China, Lebanon, Chile.
Exactly. Many more. Precisely to ensure its claim to universality wasn't just Western rhetoric. So our mission in this deep dive, really, is to explore its enduring relevance today, the persistent challenges it faces, and what it actually means to try and bridge that huge gap between its ideals and, well, the world we actually live in.
What immediately struck me digging into this is its very first article. It states something genuinely revolutionary for its time. All human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights. Just think about that. After a war fueled by ideologies of, inherent inequality.
This document steps up and declares universal inherent worth for everyone, regardless of nation, race, creed.
And it doesn't just list rights, does it? It stresses their indivisibility.
Exactly. All rights, civil, political, economic, social, cultural, they're all linked, interdependent. You can't just pick and choose.
That's precisely it. And, while it started as maybe more of a moral and political statement, aiming for global consensus, over the decades, the UDHR has become widely recognized as customary international law.
Okay, so that's a key shift from aspirational to law.
In a sense, yes. Its principles are now embedded in many national constitutions, and it directly inspired the major international human rights treaties we have today. It really is the cornerstone.
So if it's now seen as customary international law, what does that actually mean for us today? How does a, 1948 document speak to things like mass surveillance or climate change?
That's where its adaptability is so interesting.
Right, like Article 12 on privacy, written decades before the internet even existed. Exactly. And yet it provides the moral and increasingly the legal foundation for confronting corporate data mining, AI, government surveillance, affirming this principle that the same rights that people have offline must also be protected online.
That is pretty astonishing foresight, isn't it?
It absolutely is.
Yeah.
And crucially, think about the climate crisis. The UDHR doesn't explicitly mention a right to a healthy environment.
No, how could it have back then?
Right. But its core principles, right to life, health, and adequate standard of living, are directly threatened by climate change impacts.
Okay, I see the connection.
And recognizing this, the UN has now formally recognized the human right to a clean, healthy, and sustainable environment. It gives us a new tool, potentially, for accountability against climate inaction.
Despite all this, the principles, the evolving legal status, the gap between the UDHR's vision and, well, reality. It feels immense, like we're facing a profound human rights deficit. Why is that gap still so wide?
That's the critical and often disheartening question. Look at the Rohingya in Myanmar, systematically denied their right to nationality,
Which then spiraled.
spiraled into mass violence. What the UN itself described as having the hallmarks of a genocide, or considered the Uyghurs in China, mass arbitrary detention in so-called re-education camps, forced labor, coercive population control, state-imposed sterilizations, all enabled by pervasive surveillance technology.
Horrifying examples.
They starkly demonstrate how eroding just one fundamental right makes all the others incredibly vulnerable. It shows that even with powerful declarations, implementation, enforcement, that's the mountain to climb.
So how do we hold governments accountable, especially when they invoke sovereignty to, shield themselves from scrutiny? What are the mechanisms?
It's a constant, complex challenge. You have international courts like the ICJ, the International Court of Justice, and the ICC, the International Criminal Court.
Right, for the gravest crimes.
Yes, prosecuting states and individuals.
Yeah.
But crucially, they rely heavily on state cooperation, which isn't always forthcoming, to put it mildly.
So where does the real leverage come from then?
Often it comes from civil society. Groups like Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, they act as global watchdogs.
The investigators, the reporters?
Exactly. Their investigations, their reporting, their advocacy, it creates public pressure, it creates soft power, influence through persuasion, not force. And often, that's the essential force driving accountability, driving change. But as you implied, for regimes that seem immune to public pressure, the struggle is immense. It truly is.
So it's clear the Universal Declaration of Human Rights isn't some dusty, obsolete document. It's still very much our most potent tool, our kind of moral compass for global justice, isn't it?
Absolutely. It remains that vital standard, which I suppose raises an important question for you listening right now. In this world just flooded with information, competing priorities, how can you help ensure that these universal ideals move from being just a powerful declaration to becoming a lived reality for everyone?